This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But I got some things that matter, huh?
It's time for Things That Matter.
The things that matter.
Matt Spiegel brings you the things that matter from Cubs and Sox spring training.
The Spiegel guy.
What's his first name?
You're supposed to know that.
Sorry, is that offensive?
Focusing on things that matter.
They're the things that matter. So we decided to go on ahead and call it Things That Matter.
Sorry, Danny, for being interested in baseball nuance in the bullpen.
No. I'm interested, too.
These things do matter.
Things That Matter on 670 The Score.
Was Danny actually interested, for the record?
Oh, no. Certainly not. If we're being honest...
Can we just revisit that part of this open?
I think we just did. Felt good. No, look, somebody, in his defense, nah.
Yeah, what could you possibly say?
No, but there's a lot, man.
I've been to a baseball game with Danny. It was an entertaining time.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. You can debate whether the battle between Gage Workman and Jonathan Long for third string first baseman.
Let's go!
You can debate whether that matters. As of today, I'm saying no. But there are things that do matter coming out of Cubs camp and Sox camp in terms of the season you will watch on the field. And the first thing overall, Layla, is the Craig Council effect, which I just watched and talked about with players and others up close. Here's Jed Hoyer talking about Craig Council here in year number two.
This is Craig Council's second year as manager of the Cubs. Have you noticed anything different about him? I mean, I know for the beginning of spring training last year, it's a little bit like, you know, drinking out of a fire hose when you've been with one organization since you retire in 11 until last year in Milwaukee. And he just had a lot on his plate coming into last year.
Yeah, he seems so much more comfortable. He knows the people. He knows the plays. I think he has a, you know, so as a result, he knows exactly what he wants to do with this group. No question. It feels very different. And you know, last year, we had a very similar team coming back, and he was the variable. And that's not how he wants to operate. You know, he was sort of, you know, there's a lot of attention on him. People were talking about him a lot. That's not at all how he wants to operate. And I think this year, he's exactly in the role he wants to be in, and he's been great all spring.
You know, when Council took over, he talked about how it's a lot of little decisions every day that add up to managerial value.
Indeed.
And I believe in that. And now he's more free to do that. And all the people that are there now are either people he knows, you know, how to talk to and motivate, or they're people he was part of acquiring. So there's a different level of investment and effect that he can now have. And I bet you as a baseball human, Layla, can appreciate that way of defining managerial value.
And, you know, we talked a lot with his predecessor when the Midday Show had the David Ross managerial interview about knowing your personnel and knowing how to manage them. But when you see what that could mean as far as how he envisions the roster and how he will utilize it in a whole season moving forward, I think then you start to really see that take place. The subtext here, I think, is also Last season of his contract, Jed Hoyer is already more candid, and I'm here for all of it. Like, give me more candid Jed this year, because I always thought he was great to listen to, but he seems to be saying more this year than he's said in years past.
He says it about both levels of management that surround him. He's more frank about Craig Counsell, and if you listen, and it's not hard, he's more frank about ownership, too.
Indeed.
You know, in terms of what he can do and what he can't do. So I agree, it's a pretty fascinating thing. But, man, the quality of at-bats from the veterans on the bottom of this roster will be so much better. Like John Birdie, Nicky Lopez, if he makes it. You know, even like some of those guys will be so much better than the Miles Mastrobonis and Nick Madrigals of the world. And that is by design and with counsel's blessing.
Justin Turner.
Oh, that's a big
you know,
deal.
Yeah, I mean, and how much did you hear players talk about him? That's something we'll get into later, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Kevin Alcantara is the talk of spring training at Cubs camp in terms of the skill set. Here's Craig Counsell talking about the tools of Kevin Alcantara.
You know, he's still just kind of getting there as a player. And there's nothing. Everything is available to him right now. And it just continue to kind of stay on that path of getting better, of becoming consistent, of really just gaining experience. And those things are all wide open to him.
Is the power projectable to come for a young guy? I mean, because in fact he's still only 22. I mean,
yeah.
Can that just happen after a guy?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a great candidate for that, and it's you know, there's experience. It's just at bats there. Sometimes you have to swing at the slider in the dirt to not swing at it. That's just the process of becoming better and the process of gathering experience.
Kevin Alcantara, through his first three games out there, has gone 5-for-8 with a double, a stolen base, 3 RBIs, and 3 runs scored.
Wow.
And Layla, watching him as an athlete, 6'6", he's got some knee bend there at the plate.
Oh, yeah.
to make the strike zone smaller. But there is a glide to him as a runner, which you watch and makes you think of, you know, people like Eric Davis, makes you think just a little bit about Ellie De La Cruz. He's not as toolsy, not quite as fast, but there's a beauty in watching him as an athlete, and he's got the dreadlocks, and when he's running around the bases and the helmet flies off, it's awful fun, and he's nicknamed the Jaguar, and he claws at the dugout after he gets a hit, all that stuff. So there's fun and enjoyment, but there's also a tantalizing skill set.
Yeah, we got the whole experience, I think, in that game against the White Sox on Saturday when you saw that, right? Like, he goes low, especially for his height, to hit that ball to get it to go where it needed to be, and then scores from first on that Michael Bush single, and you saw that. You saw just run around. We don't know if he's stopping at third. Nope. There goes the helmet, and then he's hustling all the way. I think what's going to make you stand out in spring training, and it's stuff like that that really will make a statement early on that will impress those who matter.
Yeah, I think so. And the fact that Counsell saw him last year in a short stint in the majors towards the end and sees some improvement now and sees how the mindset can help. You know, with these guys, it's going to be like, is it better off that they get at-bats in the minors, or is it better off that he's in the big leagues to be some valuable outfield depth on the big league team? And Alcantara, I'm thinking that he might lean that way because he's willing to go the other way. Opposite field ground rule double in the game I did Friday. Another opposite field single later on.
Right.
So and he's, if he's not giving up at bats like that and battles through at bats and willing to go the opposite way, then maybe you're a little more comfortable with him playing intermittently on the big league level while you're trying to win.
Yeah, the Cubs bench is just as important as everything else we've discussed when it comes to trying to figure out if this team's going to be a real playoff contender.
Yeah.
And we mentioned Justin Turner, of course, and I do want to pick your brain about what all you heard the players talk about him about.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes to putting together a bench that's productive, is that a guy who can have that mentality and that production when it comes down to mattering in the season?
Couple of White Sox items that matter as we're doing things that matter. Spiegs and Layla on the Spiegel and Holmes show here. Colson Montgomery against a lefty in Cubs Sox on Saturday did this and then discussed it.
Playing days were over. That's it well to center field. Alcantara back at the warning track, and that is gone. White Sox fans will love to see that. Colson Montgomery, 2-run homer off a lefty.
And the White Sox on the board here in the fourth. Cubs lead 5-2.
Montgomery, big broad-shouldered kid, one of their top prospects. A couple of years ago, put up huge numbers. Last year, he had his struggles. But there's a lot of potential here. Strong kid, man. He juiced this one.
It was good. We had a really good game plan before I went up to the plate. Had a little good scouting with Marcus and I. So, and he just threw it where I was looking. So I was trying to get him over. No outs, guy on second. So I was just trying to do a job. But when it was 0-1, I still got my A swing going. So that's what happened.
Did you know it was gone immediately? It seemed like Murray did. I don't know.
I had a good idea just because we're in Arizona too, so I know the ball flies, and I know I barreled it up pretty well, so I was pretty sure I got it.
And you got him over too.
Yeah, and I got him over. Got him over and in.
That's awesome. Colson Montgomery, that one grabbed from Chuck Garfine's Twitter over there. Fun to see lefty-lefty and him get the ace swing.
Just the power. That was a ball that was low, and he reached for it and then just sends it straight away center. This is the year for him, right? He turns, 23 on the 27th? So happy early birthday to Colson Montgomery, but hopefully happy early birthday to Sox fans, because it's time to bring him up, and you want to see him do this at the big league level on a regular basis.
Yeah, so the lefty-on-lefty homer against Caleb Thielbar in the ace swing and yada, 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 but bring him up. The Sox could lean into aggression in a big way with some of their kids this year, and Montgomery at the forefront of the concept, and the whole league would end up talking about that in a pretty positive way, and the fans would love it if they really leaned in to the youth and just let them get up here and play, don't you think?
I mean, I'm old enough to know that sometimes 23 isn't young in baseball, you know? I mean, think about it. Like, the example, of course, is Juan Soto when he was, 19 in the big leagues.
From single A to the bigs.
Right, but in this case, we've been talking about Colson Montgomery for a long time. It's time. I know that there might be a work stoppage, but it is beyond time to see this guy as an opening in the opening day lineup.
And the way that the finances of the game have gone, it's like you could be actually pushing the envelope in that way by being super duper aggressive with the young kids. And again, the fans would freaking love it. And you're going through the trouble of putting great teachers on the big league staff and valuing that. Let the kids learn from the good teachers you're putting on the big league level. They got to learn somewhere. Let them learn with on the big league level. I hope the White Sox really lean into that.
Well, and grow with Will Venable, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's something to that, having your shortstop and your manager grow together.
All right, then a signing that really pleased a lot of White Sox fans. Really got them all excited, just for all the abstract issues, of course. But let's talk about the physical capabilities of the possibilities of Mike Clevinger as a White Sox reliever and or closer. Clevinger's stuff is actually going to play really well out of the bullpen. If he's of an age and limited opportunity, capacity here in terms of like people actually wanting to let him start, and if he's willing to do that shift, which he says he's willing to do, and just lean into it and rear back and fire, he's got the closer and probably the mentality to do that as well. Loathe him all you want, but this screams like a sensible idea from the White Sox perspective.
Jose Quintana was available, although Quintana's arguably still a starter.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you're avoiding multiple times through the order with Mike Clevinger and this is just a baseball conversation, then yeah, I guess closer makes sense. They keep giving him chances.
Well, that's the broader issue. Like, but what's the idea here? What's the idea here to make, to do something? Because here's the overall goal. And Shane, I know you're itching to hop in, and you will, and you should. It's a sign and flip. That's all it is.
They hoped for that last time.
I know, but so now you're going to try and sign him. And not let him start.
And the time before that.
And the time
before that.
But it's a sign and flip as a reliever. You'll get something. You turn him into a reliever, you let him go, you'll get something. I know you didn't get a lot for, you know, Kopech because you're not great at trading. But, like, you'll get something if Mike Clevinger is a valuable reliever come the deadline and showing you that. Somebody will give you something.
I don't know because they gave away Eric Fetty for nothing. Not that I'm still mad about it.
Yeah, they did a terrible job.
Shane. I don't give a rat's ass what the White Sox can get for Mike Clevinger. I don't give a rat's ass about Mike Clevinger's ability to play baseball and whether or not he can be a reliever. I don't give a rat's ass about Mike Clevinger. I do not want Mike Clevinger in my organization. I don't want him around my young players. I don't want him and his alleged drug habits around these young players.
Oh boy.
And the mushrooms and the psychedelics and the coke, allegedly. I don't want any of that around my organization when you're trying to rebuild and establish who you are now. Mike Clevinger can rot in hell. I don't want him on my baseball team, and I don't want to hear his stupid damn name anymore.
Shane's going full grobber here.
I hate Mike Clevinger, dude. He's one of the worst people on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Put it up on the bulletin board, dude.
Shane knows a lot about this situation.
The first time they signed him, they said they didn't know what was going on.
Right. And then the second time.
And the third time?
Well, the third time, they're really comfortable with it. They're clearly deeply comfortable with it.
There are a lot of people still over
there. There is no off season for.
It is. It's a good point on having him around the young players, but the thing is, we heard, didn't we, Shane? Like we heard last year and the year before that he was fine as
who'd
a
you hear that from? Who'd you hear that from?
Joe Kelly was one person we heard that from.
Okay.
Well, Joe
Kelly, was happy he got out.
Yeah. But there were others.
The issues in the White Sox clubhouse last year, the older guard that people had a problem with, and this is why I turned the ringer off, Dustin, because it's so annoying in the background.
It says Clevinger Mike. Could that be him?
Yeah, that's Mike.
Location the, hell.
The guys who had no problem with Mike Clevinger were the issue in the clubhouse. So go ahead and draw your own conclusions, but...
Oh, in terms of, like, veterans?
Correct.
In terms, okay, well, I mean, those are important conclusions to try and draw.
Yeah, I'm not just talking out my ass here.
I never say anything other than rest his soul, but may he rot and burn in hell. Period. New paragraph.
I'm with you, Les.
What was in the new paragraph? I will never know.
Les would have been so anti-Mike Clevinger, it's not even funny.
Oh, I'm sure he would have. I'm sure he would have, as you are. Al, as I would assume, did it come up on Friday, is Grobber Jr. Mark Grody.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. And I don't know if Grody is leaning into it or if it's unintentional. And I do think this is a thing that matters. And I would much rather talk about this than the preceding topic.
It's just happening. Grody is morphing into Les Grobstein.
But I can't tell if he's consciously doing it or subconsciously doing it.
At some point, the bit becomes reality. You know? It really does. All right.
He walked by carrying a shirt on a hanger a few minutes ago.
It's a shirt on a hanger. It's a newer type of situation.
And I didn't know what was going on there, but I was happy to see Grody.
Man, a lot of people agreeing with the passion from our guy Shane Reardon on Mike Clevinger. I think it's smart to try and turn him into a reliever. Exposing him to your fan base is a whole nother thing.
But, I mean, they have tried to flip him now a couple of times.
Yeah.
And they had no takers.
And your point about them being a poor flipper of Fetty and Kopech is an extremely good
one. I really liked Eric Fetty. I thought that was a really good signing.
Me too.
I loved it from the very beginning. I loved the results. And I valued him. And I'm not mad at valuing him. I just don't understand why they didn't value him as much as I did.
Those are things that matter from Cubs and Sox spring training. It is Spiegs and Layla on the Spiegel and Holmes Show. Let's talk to the great Ron Coomer next on The Score.
And now, let's meet the American League All-Stars. Infielder Ron Coomer.
Ron Coomer.
Ron Coomer.
Guy who grew up on the south side of Chicago and was a Cubs fan. It's like taking your life in your hands.
You know he's a tough guy.
That's right.
Radio analyst for your Chicago Cubs.
Wrigley Field is shaking right now.
Nine-year MLB veteran.
Base hit, Coomer going for two. Here goes the throw to third. It's a stand-up double for Ron Coomer.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Yes, very good. Well, he's been red hot. He's been in a hitting zone.
1999 All-Star.
Coomer. Coomer.
The Coom Dog.
And there you are.
No? Ron Coomer with Spiegel and Holmes.
One away, and Edmund on first. Walt's pizza's arrived. Did you hear that, Walt? That boy, Walt. It's spring training for everybody. Had a baby.
Hope you got the pepperoni, Walt. Walt's done a heck of a job.
On 670 The Score.
Ron Coomer joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. It is Spiegs and Layla Rahimi right here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show today. And he's still out there in Arizona. It's kind of nice here today, though, Coom. High of around 50. So I brought a little bit of desert air back with me. But I still hated leaving you yesterday after the game. How are you, pal?
I am doing good. I'm a little on the sunburned side today, but you know, besides that, I'm doing great. Speak.
I gotta say, man, it was so fun to sit with you for those ball games. And Layla and I were just talking off the air about like trying to be good partners for each other during the game. Layla, I can tell you, and I'm sure you're not surprised, Ron Coomer as a broadcast partner, as good as it gets.
Oh heck yeah, he's the wingman to a successful broadcast. He's easy to fly with.
We had a lot of fun. Spiegs did a great job. Matty was awesome. And we're getting a little tradition working here now that starts spring training. You and I, last few years, and it's been fun. And, we had a couple good ball games. Cubs are winning. But it's just fun, you know. And I think spring training is even more fun than a regular season as in the broadcast sense because it's so new and everything's just getting started. But we had a good time, and Walt's got his pizza from Homer and Ann, and life is good. You know, all's good, I guess.
Okay, Coom, everybody got nice to each other. So now I got to go in with the post-game questions, like you guys just wrapped
Fire
up the
away.
Game.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, Coom, Spieg said he had to knock the rust off, but what were your thoughts on his performance over the weekend?
I thought he did great. He did very good. I really do. I thought he did very good. We the hardest part about doing spring training is it's so different than a regular season game because, you know, the one inning you'll have the whole starting lineup in there. The next inning, you look down there and you go, oh, there's seven guys that have been taken out of the game. We got seven new guys and their numbers start at 72 and they go up from there. You know, so we got a whole team of pulling guards and offensive tackles just entered. And, you know, it's not always the case that, you know, you have the changes in front of you or names that go with the numbers. So it's not an easy thing to do, but you make the best of it and you try to get everybody's name in because for the young guys, you know that their families are listening or watching and you want to do that, but Spiegs did a great job. It's not the easiest job, the easiest games to do, but I will say this, him and I, we had a lot of laughs in the last couple of days, that's for sure.
Yeah, we did. The best part of it, and you know this, Coom, because this is your life, was to get to be embedded in with the ball club and where, you know, walking over to the training facility and being in the clubhouse, listening to the manager talk, and seeing the manager talk after he's done the official part when he's just kind of hanging around and will tell you a little bit more and seeing all these people, you're like an embedded journalist, like a wartime journalist who's embedded in some ways, and you get conversations and you get relationships and you really learn how the people function with the ball club. And just feeling that over the last few days, this is why I ask you, am I just feeling the optimism that comes with spring and comes with, you know, feeling the excitement of being embedded, or are things as positive as they seemed to feel over the last 3 or 4 days there at Cubs camp?
Well, a couple things. One, I understand what you're saying. I've been in camp, in one way or another, either as a player for 17 years or now as a broadcaster for 20, this will be year 23, so long time. And I understand that feeling and I know what you're talking about. And you do get that sense of you're part of the program, right? I mean, you are. You're not getting any hits and you're not making plays, but you are very much involved in what goes on and the intricacies of our game. And, you know, and there's a certain sense of, you know, the manager has a little trust in the people that are that close to the organization and things that he can say, and he'll say some things that he knows he has to have trust in you to not report right away, because it's something that's, you know, out of the respect for maybe the player, hasn't come to fruition yet, but you know in a day it's coming, right? So there's some trusts and things like that. And then, you know, the second part of that, I do believe there's a lot of optimism. I think around the league, you know, as we talk to different people, Bob Nightingale was around a lot from USA Today the last few days that you had a chance to talk to. And I think everybody feels the Cubs are the leading candidate to you know, win a division. You know, we haven't played a game yet, but, you know, that's, you know, on paper. But I think there's a sense of optimism, and there should be. You know, this is when you look at the starting lineup and you look at the rotation, and you've got some bullpen pieces now and some bench pieces that, you know, some guys, you know, Justin Turner's first two at-bats right off his couch. He's got a base hit and a walk and like a 9-pitch at-bat. I'm like, yeah, the ho-hum, you know, right off the couch, and here we go. You know, so there's some pieces there to be optimistic about, that's for sure.
We've all been around teams that have made an acquisition where, you know, the players are like, oh, this is for real. You know, like, you know when yeah. they bring up somebody or they acquire somebody who's got an outstanding background or a star. And even in listening and watching the broadcast over the weekend, it was my impression, and I want to ask this to both you, Ron, and Speaks, is that this is a group that does appreciate getting Kyle Tucker. They do appreciate getting Ryan Pressly and Justin Turner. Even though this is not a young group, I would say, it's a group that appreciates having veterans who have that World Series acumen. It certainly felt that way just hearing them talk.
Go ahead, Maddie.
Yeah, I thought so very, very much, Coom. I mean, that moment that you and I watched with Dansby Swanson and Justin Tucker working together, like that's kind of the biggest thing that I brought back from
Justin
that.
Justin Turner.
Yeah, Justin Turner. Thank you.
Yep.
Whoops. Yeah.
We just combined the two into a kicker.
Yeah. Who nobody
wants
to be associated
with. Hang with us, man. That's going to happen.
Yeah. But yeah, Coom, that's like... That experience, first of all, watching BP with you, I always learn stuff. You know that. But watching those two work together and Dansby listening to Justin Turner as much as he was in that session was pretty fascinating. So, I mean, so what do you think of, like, even veterans like Dansby can get from a guy like Justin Turner?
Oh, without question. You when you look and you go, okay, last year, the guy, the veteran player, was Michael Tauchman, right? And he was a guy that, you know, and Michael, a local guy and a very good player now at the White Sox. But, you know, when you look at Turner, he's a different breed now. You're talking about a guy that's won World Series. He's been an all-star. He's been, you know, hitting in the heart of the lineup in one of the premier organizations in baseball, playing in the playoffs. They play in the playoffs 8 or 10 years in a row. And winning it. So you know, you're adding pieces that everybody looks around the room and goes, who has the hardware, right? Who are the guys that have won the ultimate games? And who are the guys that have been competing in those games year after year after year? It was like Derek Jeter walking in the room. Everybody looked around and went, well, that's the guy. And, you know, you say what you want, but everybody pays attention to that. And I think Turner brings that to the fold. And, you know, and then Tabuti is a really good guy from what everybody has talked about through the league for years. So, you know, instead of having young guys, Layla, to your point, you know, the team was much younger. But, you know, sometimes having a bunch of youth is good. But, boy, when you have some veteran guys that they take the at-bat in the ninth inning, you go, boy, this has a chance of being a game changer. This isn't three swings, the same swing, and hope that the pitcher throws it in my zone. There are guys now that can do some different things and make an impact on the game. So I really like some of the acquisitions that have been made this year, for sure.
And I think it's just a shot in the arm to them. You know, I could hear that in some of the interviews that we've heard so far. I also appreciate guys like Ryan Pressly just saying the simple answer when I asked him, you know, what makes you so much better in the playoffs? And he's like, I absolutely hate losing. To have that kind of attitude, even though no player enjoys losing, to hear out of somebody's mouth like that who's been experienced, who's shown you what he can do on a big stage, I do think that that will help the room. I mean, you guys know better than me, but that was my assessment.
No doubt. There's, you know, there's guys that have, you know, been in that position. And there are guys that, you know, there are guys that are playing on the Dodgers right now that are signed to start the season in October, basically. They, you know, whatever they do during the regular season, their track record in October is the reason why they're a Dodger. And, you know, that's, I would say that's part of the reason Preston's here with the Cubs, is he's pitching a little chip on his shoulder because he wasn't a closer, regular closer last year. He wants to be that guy, and the Cubs need that guy. Perfect fit. And he can also, you know, help the younger bullpen guys understand what it's like to prep day in and day out in the big leagues, and pitch when you're not 100% and give a lot to an organization. So, yeah, no, it's a great answer that he gave. And at the end of the day, what more do you want out of your guys than somebody being to the point of their performance is dictated even that much more and better because – they just can't stand to lose. That's a good thing, no doubt.
Hey, Ron Coomer here with us on Spiegel and Holmes. It's Spiegs and Layla Rahimi here on The Score. So bummer not to see Matt Shaw while I was out there with this oblique issue, and you hope he comes back soon, and they're kind of optimistic about that. But I'm trying to figure out who plays behind him, Coom. Like, you know, this is an opening day first baseman, theoretically, who's a kid, and there's this Rule 5 pick, Gage Workman. There's obviously John Birdie, Nicky Lopez. I mean, these are, you know, I mean, how do you feel about that, and who might get the first call if Shaw can't go?
Well, you know, I feel for Shaw. You know, it's one of those things where you're going to get your shot, and then you're early in camp. You're missing the first week of ball games, and maybe the first 2 weeks. We'll see. That's unfortunate. I'm not 100% sure who's going to get the first shot. I would think you sign a guy like Birdie for that purpose. That's why he's here. So, you know, if you're looking at a 26-man roster and you start figuring out who are the guys that are going to make the team, you know, and there's that last two or three guys, position players, you know he's going to make the team. So it would not surprise me here in the early going if he was the guy that, you know, gets run out there quite a bit and plays most of the third base if Matt Shaw's not going to play or can't play. But then there's some other guys. You know, Nicky Lopez has showed pretty well. And you and I saw Workman. Now, he's a Rule 5 guy. So, at the end of the day, Workman's a guy that either has to make the team or get sent back. And he's hit a home run and an opposite field homer, opposite field double, and has looked pretty good at third base. So, you know, he's making a case for himself. So, we'll have to see. I really hope Shaw gets himself healthy and is able to get on the field. Just for his own mental health, you want him to get out there and be able to compete and be healthy and play and make or break the team, make the team or not because of your play, not because of an injury. I mean, that's a tough one to put on a young guy, that's for sure.
Hey, Coom, I got to bring in Shane and Tanny here. You guys, Shane, Tanny, Layla, I'm sure this won't surprise you, but when you're hanging with Ron Coomer at Sloan Park in Mesa, you are with the king. Like, other people have to go downstairs and eat media lunch, you know? Not Coom. The guy who runs the entire stadium comes over and says, this is what we're serving in the VIP area. You want some of this? And Coom's like, sure. And he waters down the infield a little bit with whatever cash he's got lying around. takes care of the booth, and we're getting served. Fifth inning, hey, look, there's hot dogs and cookies just showed up here. Oh, and people with the last name Sloan are coming in and just like hanging out and trying to kiss the ring. It's Shane, this does not surprise you that Coom is king of the castle.
Not in the least. And me and Coom, our neighbors, we're in the same neighborhood, and I can't walk around the neighborhood without people saying, oh my gosh, have you seen Ron Coomer in this neighborhood? I say, yeah, I've seen him walking the sidewalks.
Sure,
yeah.
Having lived in that neighborhood, I can also confirm.
Just take it, Coom.
Certain cafe that's pretty popular in town. Well, everybody loves Coom there.
I mean, Tanny,
we have some fun in our neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, you do. Here's the thing.
They pour a nice glass of wine, don't they?
Here's the thing about you. Here's the thing about you. It kind of reminds me of Sinatra used to say, how did all these people get in my room? Everywhere you go, Coom, That's your neighborhood. Everywhere you go, you know?
It's called being around baseball a long time. That's what it ends up being. You know, that's been my life since I was 20 years old, and I love being at the park, and you try to make everybody feel some of that. I think, you know, what more could you ask for out of life than spending your entire adult life, your office being Wrigley Field, Yankee Stadium, the Metrodome, Dodger Stadium. That's been the office for a long time, and whether it's a player or a broadcaster, so I don't take that for granted, but I sure appreciate it, and you hope that you can bring a little of that to some other people, too.
You're like the PG-13 Mr. Rogers, you know? It's the people you meet each day in the neighborhood.
Well, I don't think people accuse me of being Mr. Rogers now, Layla. I don't think that'll be...
Hey, I said PG-13. Yeah, I mean, we can kick it up to rated R sometimes, but you know, people like you.
Yeah. The cigar on occasion will throw that right off.
There we go. Yeah.
Next
that's
time.
That's suitable for broadcast teenagers.
Next time we'll have a cigar, Coom. Thanks for the warm welcome and the great partnership this weekend, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great job this weekend. I appreciate you coming down, and I love the tradition we're creating here in spring, and look forward to it again. I know we'll be doing some games here probably during the season, so I look forward to that. Guys, always love listening to you. Thanks for sure. Shader, I'll be back in the hood here in another couple weeks, buddy.
Dinner on me, brother.
Dinner on Shane, as long as Mitch covers it. I think that's the way that goes.
Happy baseball season, Coom.
Shaner, how about that? We got a hockey nickname out of Coom for Shane Reardon. That's outstanding.
What is it? What's with the dinners? You've been hiding this from me? How dare you?
I
know where Coom lives.
They live in the same building?
Same building. No, okay. It's a few blocks on the road.
Yeah, no, you couldn't afford Coom's building.
Coom couldn't afford mine.
Oh! Here we go.
I can't afford mine.
That's my old building, and that's why I don't live there anymore.
See? So we can attest. Oh, my God. Outstanding. An absolute surefire NBA Hall of Famer was in town over the weekend and had good things to say about a young bull. I'm intrigued. You should be, too. AJ Pierzynski, top of the hour. But we'll hear from that Hall of Famer next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
You guys are friends of the program, man. I can never turn y'all down.
I know that's right. That's Stacey King.
The friends of the program are my friends, and they are friends for life.
Afternoons on The Score.
Mazzellas!
Whoa!
Watch your head, Boozy Vert.
Matas Buzelis, brightest spot for the Bulls these days? I think so.
Yes.
I mean, looks like probably the best draft pick of Arturis Karnišovas' era here. Io DeSumo, really nice as a second rounder, but Matas looks like you can squint and see him becoming a superstar, or at least a star.
Yeah, it's between Io and Matas for me.
Okay, in terms of best draft pick.
Yeah, I've really appreciated what Io has become.
Me too. But in terms of ceiling...
Yeah, that's it, right? Like, you're already seeing what he's doing at such an early stage of his career.
Yeah, and he's so young, and it's like... And I think they got it pretty wrong with Patrick Williams, so, you know...
He's hurt again, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's hurt, but maybe that'll mean some more minutes for guys like Julian Phillips and more. But anyway, Matas played against the Phoenix Suns, had, what, 15-3? 15 points, 3 rebounds, and after the game... A guy who's very tall, with a good handle, can shoot it, and sure can finish. Kevin Durant, who had 27-11, the surefire future Hall of Famer, was asked about Matas Buzelis. And let's hear one of the game's greats talk about the Bulls' hope.
I like Matas. Am I saying his name right?
Yes.
Yeah, I liked him when he was in the G League. Night. I mean, he's long, athletic, can shoot it. Definitely going to have some bumps, you know, some... bumps and bruises as he get through his first few years in the league, trying to figure stuff out. But, you know, the more experience, the more reps he gets on the floor as a starter, the better he'll become. Billy's giving him more opportunity to just play. You know, I hear him on the sidelines, just attack, 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 shoot the ball. The rest of his teammates encouraging him to do that. So playing underneath that is just going to make you a better player. And, you know, just like the rest of Chicago, I'm just going to sit back and watch and see what happens from here. And, you know, I got high expectations just like you guys do. But you also know that you can't bank your whole franchise on just one player. I think everybody needs to come with their game and show that they can become a full team. And I think he's a huge piece to that.
I love how much Kevin Durant loves basketball. I wish somebody would have asked him how to fix All-Star Weekend, because I think he would have had the right answer. And for him to appreciate Matis Buzelis' game and to know he played for Ignite, I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. That is not false praise coming from KD. That means he's been watching.
Yeah, he doesn't lie when he talks about basketball and his opinions on stuff. He gives you the real deal. He cares about it. And he doesn't mind being abrasive and stuff like that. And you're right to know the full context of the career with G League Ignite. And I love that he's listening to what Billy's saying to him. Because obviously Kevin played for Billy. So he knows what Billy's about. And he hears Billy urging Matis to just shoot, be aggressive, go for it. And he's like, that's the right thing. Just let him play. Just let him play. Let him play and figure it out.
Well, and that's respect. Like, KD has oftentimes had really positive comments about young Bulls. You know, this is nothing new for him. He talked about Kobe White. I believe he's also said things about Patrick Williams. Like, he appreciates being asked his opinion about other players. And I like to see what he sees in them, because that's something that you want to facilitate and grow. The only frustrating piece of it is, I guess, is that you want to see if Matis can turn this into meaningful minutes at such a young age. You know, in crunch time, is he going to play? And unfortunately, you didn't see that against the Suns. Like, you want to see him at the end of the game, if he's going to be this much of a factor, especially in a season like this. Bulls get their draft pick back. You're allowed to experiment. You know, you're allowed to not stress out as much as to whether or not your pick is protected anymore.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for an outcome of a game? Are you willing to trust him with more, because there might be a positive outcome?
You know, the issue being trust is correct. I got to say, of everybody involved with the Bulls, in terms of making decisions like that, I do trust Billy.
Of course.
In terms of looking at a young player and deciding what they're worthy of, and even deciding, like, is it make more sense for me to get Matis experience in here or try to win this ball game with somebody else, or like how he's parsing out that time. God, I don't trust AK. There's some players on there that I don't necessarily trust, but I do trust Billy's instincts in that way.
That's it. Billy gets the best part about this season is Billy Donovan's coaching plan gets realized, and he's not punished for it. And neither is anybody who watches the Bulls. Like, this is the style of basketball we've wanted to see them play. So, you know, the biggest question for so many years was, is it Zach or is it DeMar DeRozan, who's got the ball in his hands, if you want to trust him with the final shot? Okay, now this is a team in transition. This is a team that you could argue is rebuilding. We can't use that word necessarily. I don't know.
Yep.
But who's it going to be? Who are you teaching to trust in those moments? And that's a question that I think deserves to be asked.
I think AJ Pierzynski has done a pretty interesting job in trying to walk the line between telling some truths about the White Sox and keeping some relationships with ownership of the White Sox. And we'll ask him to do that again next, as we talk about the Ishbias. Am I saying it right? I want to make sure that caller's happy. I just want to make sure, you know.
Stop spewing your garbage.
Take care of him.
Rich hobbyist. God, how dismissive.
I really am. It's the new me. I'm leaning into the dismissive
heel phase. Turn speaks.
Yeah, it's
heel turn speaks.
Yeah, I mean, the caller was right. It's actually Justin.
Justin Ishbia.
Yeah.
Just want to get it right. We'll talk to AJ Pierzynski next on Spiegel and Olm, Speaks and Layla on The Score.